Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Canto 3, chapter 26. Verses 44 and 45, we'll probably do a little more.
Karambha putri saurabhya. Shanto gram ladibi pratak.
Shanto gram ladibi
pratak. Dravya vayava vaishamya.
Dravya
Ganda eko vibhidyate.
Ganda eko vibhidyate.
Karamba putti saurabhya.
Karamba putti saurabhya.
Shanto gram ladibi pratak.
Shanto gram ladibi pratak.
Dravya vayava vaishamya.
Dravya vayava
Ganda eko vibhidyate.
Ganda eko vibhidyate.
Karambha.
Karambha.
Mixed.
Mixed.
Puti.
Puti.
It's got to be a good word. Offensive.
Offensive.
Saurabhya.
Saurabhya.
Fragrant.
Fragrant.
Shanta.
Shanta.
Mild.
Ugra.
Strong. Pungent.
Amla.
Acid.
Adibihi.
And so on.
Pratak.
Separately.
Dravya.
Of substance.
Avayava.
Of portions.
Vaishamya.
According to diversity.
Gandaha.
Odor.
Ekaha.
One.
Vibhidyate.
Is divided. Translation. Well, I'll read the translation of the previous one and this one. Then the purport. Previous translation, text 44. Due to the interaction of water with the taste perception, the subtle element, odor, evolves under superior arrangement. Thence, the earth and the olfactory sense by which we can variously experience the aroma of the earth becomes manifest. Text 45. Odor, although one, becomes many, as mixed, offensive, fragrant, mild, strong, acidic, and so on, according to the proportions of associated substances. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Mixed smell is sometimes perceived in foodstuffs prepared from various ingredients, such as vegetables mixed with different kinds of spices and asafoetida. Bad odors are perceived in filthy places. Good smells are perceived from camphor, menthol, and similar other products. Pungent smells are perceived from garlic and onions. Acidic smells are perceived from turmeric and other sour substances. The original aroma is the odor emanating from the earth, and when it is mixed with different substances, this odor appears in different ways. Omagyana timarandasya. Yanantana sadakaya chakshud and miritam jena tasmai. Shri Gurave Namaha. Srila
Shri Chaitanya Madhoki Stam Stapitam Yena Bhuktare Svayam Rupa Gagamayam Tadati Svapadantika. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 10, the first verse, Shukadeva Goswami says that there are 10 subject matters in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Two of the 10 subject matters are both in relation to creation, Sarga and Visarga. This is Sarga. It is what the Lord does to manifest the ingredients of creation, the 24 elements. And Visarga, along with time. And Visarga is what Brahma does. He takes the ingredients and makes things. This is Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya, it's Kapila Dev speaking to Devahuti, describing the unfolding of the elements in that sarga process. And earlier in the third canto, chapter 10, which is the section that I'm discussing now, covering and, you know, reading from, it's Visarga. So it's not chronological. Sarga comes before what Brahma does. But what Brahma does, for reasons Vyasadeva knows, he's presenting what Brahma does first, because like it's maybe it's more relatable. Because it's something that we do. We put things together and in different mixtures. But we don't have the intelligence that Brahma does. So we get bewildered by contact with matter. Specifically bewildered by thinking we're doing it. Kartaham iti manyate. False ego, acting through false ego and getting bewildered by the circumstance and not seeing the unseen hand of the Lord. But Brahma sees the unseen hand of the Lord. He has to, because he has a very complex, very intricate, very no mistakes allowed service. Imagine if you had to do some service where no mistakes are allowed. And because the consequences are like outrageous. There's a mistake in putting the universe together. So he's very qualified. And part of that qualification is he's very intelligent, beyond like Gyan. He has, you know, he's a pure devotee. And he understands how all the ingredients go together. Now, in that section, as well as in this section, in chapter 25, there's a term, tanmatra. What does tanmatra mean? Have you heard that term before? Tanmatra. Huh?
What is touch?
That's one of the five. Touch. It's Panchabhuta is the gross elements. Tanmatra is what comes from the gross elements. The objects of the senses. Following that comes the senses that perceive the objects. And then the active senses. So let's go back in time. two time topics. One time topic is back in time to what we find in Sri Brahma Samhita, where Lord Vishnu is in his yoga nidra, mystic slumber. You know what nidra is? Sleep. But it's not sleep like his sleep is yoga nidra. He's never asleep. It's a pastime of mystic slumber. And his eyes are open. And he's enjoying his pastimes with Rama Devi, his internal potency. Just like Lakshmi Narayan and Sita Ram and Radha Krishna, Rama, Vishnu, Mahavishnu, his consort is Rama Devi. And while doesn't describe what those activities are, but transcendental activities with Rama Devi, and he's fully conscious, he is conscious of Chaya Devi, who is the reflection. Chaya means shadow. The shadow of Rama Devi. And he sees she's dormant. She has nothing to do. And she wants something to do. And he's compassionate. He wants to give her something to do. So he gives her something to do. He does so just by his glance. Very gracious, gentle, effortless glance. But that glance is very powerful. With his glance, the living entities who have been dormant within the body of Mahavishnu are carried to that Chaya Devi, or another name is Pradhan. Pradhan means the sum total of the material ingredients in an unmanifested state, undifferentiated state. The term in Sanskrit is avyakta, unmanifested, undifferentiated, total material substance. He glances. The living entities are carried by the glance and time energy, because you don't have events without time. Material events without time. And this is a material event. So time energy is needed. Off it goes. Time energy, living entities. The living entities in the dormant state, they carry subtle karma. In their active state, they carry subtle karma too, but in their dormant state, subtle karma. And that subtle karma, along with time, remember the Bhagavad Gita, the five topics? Do you know what the five topics of Bhagavad Gita are? Time, karma, Ishwara, Jiva, Prakriti, material nature. So we're just talking about those five topics, and they're mixing, because there's a point where they're separated, so there's no mixing. Time, living entities, Prakriti's over there, Ishwara's over here, and there's no karma yet. Because karma is temporary and the other four are eternal. But mixing, no mixing. So there's mixing by the Lord's arrangement. So the living entities, in contact with Pradhan and the time energy, something happens, because the time energy is there, because you don't have things happening without time. And the first thing that happens is some elements start to separate out of that big warehouse. And the first element that comes out is our dear friend, false ego. And then false ego, in contact with the mode of goodness, manifests our other dear friend, the mind. False ego, in contact with the mode of passion, manifests material intelligence. False ego in contact with the motive ignorance manifests, now listen carefully, it manifests the five gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether. We already have mind, intelligence, and false ego, so those are the eight. Now it's a further delineation, further separation. From the five you get another bunch. So the next five that manifest are tanmatra, the objects of the senses. And then comes the senses that perceive the objects of the senses, and then the working senses. So there's five, 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 and five. What's the math? How many is that? 4 times 5 is 20. Good. And then previously the mind, intelligence, and false ego. That makes 23. And there's one more to make the 24 elements in Sankhya philosophy. That's collective. The translation is made in different ways within this canto. Sometimes it's the sum total of the ingredients, or sometimes it's contaminated consciousness. Cetta is the Sanskrit word. So here, in this section, chapter 26, Kapila Dev is describing the unfolding of the elements that I just very quickly went through. But he's detailing it more. It's like when I was a very new devotee in the Boston Temple, the art department was there and they had teamwork. A new chapter would come out from the Bhagavatam. The artists would sit together, think about what illustrations they'd like to make to accompany that chapter of the Bhagavatam. They made a plan, and then it went as follows. Bharadraj made like the sketch. You've seen artists, you know, Michelangelo, or they make a sketch of what the painting is going to be before they make the painting. So he would be the creative sketcher. Jadarani would fill it in, and Muralidhar would do all the detailing. You know, all the jewels and all the strands of hair and all the little fine details. So this is some of the fine, moderate refining of the details of the unfolding of the elements. It's the Muralidhar production. And the sequence in back to the 10th chapter of the third canto, this is chapter 26, it's not described in this chapter. It is described in detail, reasonable detail, the influence of the time element, which is really fascinating. Like, when normally we think of time as, you know, it's 8:22 on Tuesday morning, May something or other. You know, that's time. And, you know, it's such and such time, we're going to end the class, then we're going to go take breakfast and go do whatever we do. That's time. Then there's relative time. You know, let's say 1 hour passes for us. What is it for the demigods, and what is it for an insect? It's, you know, time is relative. It acts, the Bhagavatam describes that. And the background of that relative time is eternal time. Actually, time is eternal. This idea of relative time is like little illusion units. It's, you know, matter and space, you know, so like there's a whole chapter in this canto, calculation of time by the atom. As atom moves from this point to that point, it's like there's a unit of time. But you know, what it is for the atom and what it is for the universe is relatively different. So in the background, it's specific language. In it's Kapila Dev speaking to Vidura, but in the language of the Bhagavatam, it's time is eternal, and time facilitates Maya. Because not only you don't have activities without time, you don't have Maya without time. Take away the illusory conception of time, and you have the spiritual world. Like one reporter once asked Srila Prabhupada Swamiji, so many people are becoming your followers, becoming Krishna conscious. What will happen if everyone becomes Krishna conscious? Prabhupada's reply was, don't worry, it won't happen. But if it did happen, this place would become Vaikuntha. Because in Vaikuntha, time is conspicuous by its absence. It's a nice phrase. Eternal time is there, but time as we know it is absent. Because time as we know it is the nimitta, it's the instrument of the Lord to create illusion. Because that's what all of this stuff is about. It's Krishna's energy unfolding in various ways so that the living entity can have illusion. And if you don't have living entities that are rebellious, you don't need all this stuff, dravya, material elements and subtle material elements. So this tanmatra, which is what this subject is, Prabhupada calls it the subtle elements. So when we think of the elements, there's the five, and then there's the subtle elements, which is, and one of them is being discussed here. So one of the elements is water. Earth, water. Fire, air, ether. So here's the element. If this is false ego, in contact with the mode of ignorance manifests the five. One of them is water. From the element, the gross element, water, you get a subtle element. The object of the senses. In this case, water, due to interaction of water with taste perception. What's taste perception? It's a capacity. Just like, take the example of locomotion. Locomotion means the ability to move. So, supposing your car breaks down. A car is a machine, and it's a machine with the intelligence of the human being to manifest the capacity for locomotion. You can do locomotion by walking. But the capacity for locomotion uses another machine besides the legs, and it's a car. But it's just a machine to manifest the power of locomotion. Supposing you lose your legs, put on another one. What are they? Prosthesis, a false leg. And then you can, or some other thing that they have these days for, through technology, some way to, like, you know, be an athlete and have limbs that are missing. Because the power, the subtle power, is behind the instrument. It may look like this, it may look like that, it may look like something else. It's the power of locomotion that drives it. So similarly, the power of, or the potential, the subtle potential for taste perception. So water interacts with that, the subtle capacity for taste. What do you get? The subtle element of odor evolves under superior arrangement. Thence, the earth and the olfactory sense. Olfactory? That's the nose. The instrument. So,
the element, the subtle element, the instrument for perceiving the subtle element, and then in turn later comes the working senses, five in number. Thence the earth, the olfactory sense, by which we can variously experience the aroma of the earth, becomes manifest. Then this verse, it gives the delineation of the categories of, there are different types of, this is like the detailing, there are types of odors. Some are mixed, some are this, some are that, some are that, some are that. And there are two words that are important in the verse. One is prithak, and very similar is vividiyate. Not vividiyate, vividyate, vividyate. So divided. And pratak means separated. Like the verse in Bhagavad Gita, pratak tena bahudha vishvato mukham. Pratak means separated or divided. Like bina, separated. Very similar meaning. So there's odor, and then there's differentiation of different types of odors that come from, like, you know, the reservoir, mixed. Then separate out this one, separate out that one, separate out that one, or mixed. And there's like this possibility of odor, because the one of the five gross elements mixes with the capacity for sense perception, subtle capacity, before there's even the sense to detect it. It's unfolding. So we'll go back. There's Pradhan, the big warehouse. And everything is all mixed up. There's not like shelves or there's this and that and that. It's just like big, you know, somebody's bedroom they haven't cleaned. Just things are all over the place. Go clean your room. Okay. Here's the first element, false ego. Then mixing with the modes of nature, mind, intelligence, five gross elements, five subtle elements, five senses to perceive those elements, five working senses. Because those, the next set of five, five, and five are dependent upon the first five. So there's one system that says there's eight. Mind, intelligence, false ego, subtle. The five gross, eight. That's the Bhagavad Gita model. The Bhagavatam model is further delineated, but it's just a subset of those eight. So, like, you know, if you're ever asked the question, or ask yourself the question, which is it? Is it eight or 24? And the answer is, both are fine. Just this model, that model accomplishes the same thing. The Bhagavatam model is the postgraduate study of the eight. It's the same. It's just a different way of looking at the same thing. They both work. They're both right. Because the three sets of five are derived from the fourth, or the first of them, the five gross elements. And then unfolding, 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 unfolding. In the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, it does it in reverse. Annihilation. The subtle elements fold in, fold in, fold in, fold in, fold in, and it goes back to the unmanifest state. And then some time passes, and then it unfolds and unfolds and unfolds and unfolds, and it stays for some time. And it falls back and falls back and falls back and falls. And it's just cyclical. So in the 10th chapter of this canto, Maitreya says there's three cycles of time. Big, intermediate, and small. But it's the same principle. One principle is sarga. The Lord unfolds. And then there's like the creation of Brahma. It's the same principle. And there's things that we do. It's the same principle. Boop, 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 boop. Boop, 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 boop. It's over. And it can be the cycle of our life, or it can be the cycle of our day, or it can be the cycle of an hour, or a cycle of a minute, or a cycle of a moment, and something comes into being, stays for some time, and goes out of being. In the background, the unseen hand of the Lord is time, eternal time. And behind eternal time is the person, Krishna. But the time is an instrument. It's the hand that brings things into being for however long they endure, based upon the relativities of the living entities, guna and karma. They stay for some time and then they're gone. So whatever our lifespan is, or a moment of happiness, and it may become, or a period of distress, and it may be, you know, short or long, and it's all the action of time, proportionate to the guna and karma of the living entity. You know, the choices that we make in terms of association with modes of nature, or persons who are carrying different modes of nature, or ultimately the Supreme Person. Associating with the Supreme Person through a free will choice. I'm going to sit and be attentive in my chanting. Or I'll sit and chant, but I won't be attentive. Or I won't chant. Or whatever choices we make. It's determining the association that we have, and that's going to determine the action of time, and know what our experiences will be. We're sat asad yoni janmasu, 13th chapter Bhagavad Gita. We're determining, we're responsible for the good and the bad that happens in our life. And if we're experiencing something bad, we're responsible. If we're experiencing something good, we're responsible. I mean, you know, ultimately it's the hand of God, but he's just yayatam mam prapadyante tangstataiva pachamya. He's just reciprocating with how we regard him. And then flows from that our experiences and the responsibilities that we carry for the past free will choices that we've made. And so the advice of the Bhagavatam is, and Bhagavad Gita, is don't get into the program of endlessly trying to rearrange the configurations of matter as if you're the controller of that. The unseen hand of the Lord is controlling that. Rather, accept your deserve, whatever that is, good, bad, mixed, and put your attention upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the purpose of this section, the Samkhya philosophy, What's in the age of Satya Yug, what's the process of achieving spiritual perfection? Meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Sankhya is to assist the person who learns Sankhya on meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So how is this helping us? Sounds like a science class or something. How is this helping us meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead? There's the unseen hand of the Lord. And when we see the unfolding of things, we should know the unfolding of things has behind it the unseen hand of the Lord. And ultimately the Supreme Person. Let us fix our mind upon the Supreme Person and not be bewildered by the actions of these events that are taking place here due to our past guna and karma. And so if we turn our attention through meditation, fix our mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's perfection, regardless of what's happening on this temporal plane. The configurations of matter can change unlimitedly. That's okay. It's not going to affect one iota my
concentration upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So knowledge helps detachment. Doesn't guarantee it. But this couplet, Jnana Vairagya, it's like everywhere in the Vedas. Only our couplet is Yukta Vairagya. With knowledge, you use it. Yukta means engage. Yukta Vairagya. Take that knowledge that powers or fuels detachment and engage in service to Krishna with detachment, not from Krishna, detachment from the fruits of our work, detachment from the sensibility, the mentality that the whole purpose of all of this is so that I can enjoy. Detachment from that illusion. Because that illusion is what binds us to this influence of illusory time and the instrument that helps us get involved in karma and speculation and suffering. Unnecessary. The knowledge of Sankhya philosophy being presented by Kapila Dev to Devahuti is to assist in that. One last thing. The impersonalists, they like Sankhya. And they also like the impersonal feature of time. Anything that's impersonal, it's like they like it. Anything that can help them avoid surrendering to Krishna. So they like Sankhya as Kapila Dev likes Sankhya. They like the impersonal feature of the Supreme, which in the third chapter of the 10th chapter of this canto, it describes time as the impersonal, is an impersonal manifestation of the Lord, direct, but behind the impersonal is person. Behind time is the powerful. Behind Shakti is Shaktiman. So how do we regard a police officer? It depends on if you're a criminal or if you're law-abiding. That's will determine how you, if you see the police officer, it's, oh, good day, sir. How is everything? Oh, everything's fine. That's if you're law-abiding. You know, you feel safe because he's there protecting. And if you're a criminal, it's another how you regard the police officer. And time energy is infallible. It's like a perfect police officer. He doesn't miss a beat. Under the direction of the Supreme Lord, according to the regard the living entity has for the Supreme, the time energy acts differentially. Not preferentially, but differentially. Krishna is not favoring this one and against that one. But as they regard for him, he reciprocates. The experience of the passage of time is different from one entity from another entity. Besides species, even like within the same species, the passage of time is different depending on our consciousness. I mean our own experience. When you're really absorbed in chanting, you're not looking. And when you're, like, the passage of time is different. We're being given the opportunity through the process of devotional service, the simple activity of chanting and all the other things that we do in devotion to Krishna, to enter into that realm of eternal time. Based upon our regard or our relationship with Krishna, our eagerness to be in consciously present in our relationship with Krishna once again. He's inviting us, and we're thinking about it. Maybe doing something about it, but know, the degrees to which we direct our attention. So it leads to manmana. The opportunity is there in the most effective way through the process of devotional service. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskaro. That's Bhagavad Gita. This is Srimad Bhagavatam detailing through knowledge of matter and how it's under the control of the Supreme Lord, simply to facilitate the desires of the living entities, but built into that process of creation, the unfolding of the elements, there is similarly, simultaneously, an opportunity to get out of the illusory sense of being the enjoyer and the proprietor and, you know, controller of matter. Someone else is. And let us worship him. Okay. And there, see if there's any discussion. Yes? Let's do the on-topic one first.
About this order, our body is made up of these five gross elements, so our body should be having like a natural order. Should have like a
natural order. Are you saying?
Yeah.
Natural order.
Order for our body.
I don't know what you mean by that.
Odor.
Odor. Odor. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
That's what my question. Since our body is made up of these five elements,
yes,
it has its own taste and odor. So the body which we have now, like individual, each of us should have our own.
Well, that's true. Have you noticed? I won't go further with that one.
With our relative chant, in this material world, we have like different lokas, like after Indra loka, till Brahma loka, that belongs to this material world. So there is a relative chant difference between each.
Yes, but now besides even. It's true what for between one loka and another loka. It's also true between on the same loka one species and other species. It's also true, like I was just hearing Prabhupada say, one person, their life expectancy may be 100 years, another person, their life expectancy may be 60 years. It's set by time, according to the guna and karma living entity. And there's nothing they can do to prolong it. It's what it is. What to speak of between lokas. But you step back from that, let's say on the same planet, it's the same passage of time. But life duration is 60 years, life duration is 100 years. A life duration is 24 hours.
So this relative time with the matter causes a duality down in this material world.
Well, it's expand that statement a bit more, and the answer is yes. Because duality is not just that set of things. It's there's additional sets of things. Like, let's say, the duality of pleasure and pain. You know, this is pleasure. But if it's winter, it's pain. Same person, same place, same fan.
And go for next.
Yeah.
In the spiritual world, we don't have the time. I mean, it's the time is eternal, which is absent. Like today's.
Relative time. Time as we know it is absent. Time is there. Eternal time is there.
So I was wondering, like, there should be events going on in the spiritual world too.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
So how do
In fact, just to amplify, what we experience here is but a reflection of there. Otherwise, we don't have it here. Perverted of what's there, but it's there. In a pure, uncontaminated condition. Go ahead.
But without, I was trying to visualize, or I'm trying to understand how the events would go without.
Oh, don't try. It's inconceivable, because what's conceivable is within our experience, and it's beyond our experience, because our experience is within this realm, relative time. Achintya Shakti. Just be happy with that. Now, next. Done? Oh, okay. Anyone else?
What's the difference between air and ether? What's the difference between air and ether?
Air moves. Air is more gross, and ether is more subtle. I'll give two examples. One is a spaceship. Okay, we're in Cape Canaveral and we're sending a spaceship, and it's going up, 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 and it goes through the atmosphere of the Earth, and it goes beyond the atmosphere of the Earth. What's out there? Ether or space. So air is surrounding the Earth and makes up the atmosphere of the Earth, but beyond that is space or akash or ether. But now here's the Earth, here's the air surrounding the Earth, and both of them are within the vastness of sky. You follow? Because, like, supposing you're in an airplane and you're flying through the air. Is sky also there?
Yeah.
But it's more subtle. Here's another example. I distinctly remember this. I even remember the teacher's name, 8th grade science class. He put on the big table in front a bell jar. You know what a bell jar is?
Yeah.
It's like transparent glass that's really thick, like thick. And it's like, you know, this big thing, just put it on the desk. And like put a seal at the bottom so no air could get in. And then he put a vacuum pump, hooked it up to the bell jar. You know, noisy, and it pumped everything out of the bell jar. And then he asked us what's inside. So all earth elements, water elements, and air elements are taken out. What's inside? He said it's a vacuum. But we would say it's akash, or ether, or space. And he would go, no, it's nothing. Our statement is, from Scripture, there's two things, Krishna and Krishnas, and there's not a third thing. So inside, there's something. It's akash, or ether, or space. And there's no, because otherwise, their idea of space is, it's just void. It's just nothing. And then they have all these theoretical physics thing that says you take space and shrink it into a singularity, and it becomes a black hole. That's theoretical physics. I won't bore you with that. But we say, the Vedas say, that everything that exists is Krishna's energy, and the person upon whom Krishna's energies rest, that's Krishna. and even his personal expansions. Everything is Krishna or Krishna's. But so, back to your question. Air is the element by which touch, like you know the fan, you can feel the air is moving, you can feel it. And ether is the element where sound is carried. So like, you know, you've got your cell phone, you dial somebody's phone number, and what happens? It's a radio, little transmitter, sends it up to through air into space to a satellite, and it bounces from the satellite back to your mom and says, yes, Hari Bol, what's up? Because it's sound that's being transmitted through ether. Past air into the space, ether, and then back. It's still ether, and you got the signal. Your sound is carried by ether, or space, or Akash. Okay. Anything else? Yes? From yesterday, okay.
I was wondering, like, when we do some services and there's some situations come with other devotees, so what I felt is my mood of service actually disappear on that time, and the anger.
That's when it should really be. That's when it should be really present, not just like, you know, sitting back in your rocking chair thinking about some service I have to do. But the mood of service is when you're doing the service. That's really, you know, what the mood of service means. Otherwise it's theoretical. Then you take the theoretical. You can practice the theoretical, but go to the laboratory of life and do the practical. Right? Like science. You learn something theoretical. Then you go to the laboratory and you do it. So life is a laboratory of taking the theoretical and doing it, practical. And then, you know, you're doing the practical. You're doing the science experiment and, you know, they have a little obstacle, something. Bunsen burner won't light or, you know, somebody, something. Then you have to address it. So you can do the practical. You apply it. And just, if it doesn't work, you know, you start the experiment over again, you do it again. You do it again and just, you know, do it again. Abhyasa. Keep practicing. It's focused on principle. In a mood of service to Guru and Krishna. Just keep practicing. That's what mood of service means.
Regards to the class, you mentioned 24 elements. I just wanted to know the last element.
Cheta is the Sanskrit word, and I explained that in this third canto it's translated in different ways in different places. So I'm not going to say this one's right and that one's wrong. It's how the Prabhupada has rendered the word. Contaminated consciousness is one. The sum total of the material elements is another. But that's the 24th element. And at times, Prabhupada said, at times, the 25th element, it's not material, but so that the picture is clear, it's called jiva and paramatma. So matter and spirit. Done. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.